Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And Jim, we have a classic Marvel comic that is long overdue with some microscope dissection on the Cartoonist Kayfabe channel, the Galactus Trilogy. But first, what do you have?
I have patreon.com/Jim Rugg. This week, I just posted a large update comparing these page-by-page accounts of same story, drawn two different times, Street Angel Lost Dog and Street Angel's Dog. And I'm holding up these pages because the reason this latest installment is so big is one of these is 32 pages and one is 24. So you get to see some of the creative process of how do you edit down this story, even though it's essentially the same story. And it's kind of a fun process going through. You know, it was the first story I did for Image Comics with Street Angel, and it was the last story I did with Image Comics for Street Angel, at least for the moment. So you can find that on patreon.com/Jim Rugg, along with a lot of my out-of-prints mini comics and zines, a lot of original art, and basically what we do here on Cartoonist Kayfabe, it's me doing it with my own comics and art. So patreon.com/Jim Rugg.
So spoilers, man, the colonic worm monster didn't make the final cut.
Did not, no.
No pun intended. This is one of my favorite Jim Rugg panels ever created, by the way. I really feel that movement. Red Room issue 1 is going to be hitting the stands in May, which means the stores need to order these suckers at this point. By the time this video is out there, tens of thousands of people have pre-ordered this comic so far. I'm shooting for six figures though, man, so I'm a failure until I hit those numbers. There are other covers for this issue that are certainly helping to kind of goose those numbers, man. There's the Ed Piskor variant that a store can get once they purchase five copies of Red Room. You help goose the numbers with the Jim Rugg variant by way of Dan Klaus and 8-Ball number 1. A store orders 12 copies of Red Room for the shelves. They could purchase the Jim Rugg variant. And Peach Momoko, who is exclusive to Marvel at this moment, did a variant cover, 20 copies. That a store gets, they're going to be able to scoop up that cover. And there are a couple stores out there, man, that bought and invested into Red Room at the 1,000 copy level, man. So we do special covers for those stores. This is Third Eye Comics in Maryland. And get your hands on the variant cover there. They're also selling bundles of all the different covers. Anyhow, plugs out of the way. Jim, when you talk to a certain demographic of comic reader, man, there is the Galactus Trilogy is in the upper echelon of Marvel Comics that came out at a certain time period. Those original issues, would you say prohibitively expensive?
From the day I started reading comics, they were out of my price range.
So we'll take a look at the Treasury Edition.
Well, guys, just wait a minute. I've been watching your videos. You use this reprint stuff. We can't do that here, all right? So let's look at the real thing.
There it is, man.
Beautiful.
Warren puts his Disney down on the table.
Allow me to introduce myself.
Yes.
So here we are, the actual three issues of The Coming of Galactus as they were printed. I got to say, of all my superhero reading, this is my favorite story, bar none.
Warren, you've come through the channel a couple of times in the past, but give the listeners, we've got a lot more subscribers since you were last here, give the listeners a little introduction.
Well, I'm a comics historian. I just got finished co-curating sub-curating, actually, is more appropriate, a show. There are two shows in Chicago on comics that are coming up June through October. I worked on the one that Chris Ware is curating, 19th century to 1960. Dan Nadel's doing 1960 forward. I've written two...
I'm a part of that show, by the way. I have some pieces
cool
in there.
Oh, very cool. I wrote Cartoons for Victory, Eisner-nominated history. I've lectured on comics, and I am the executive director of Small Press Expo.
Heck of a qualification.
Yeah, I would point all of the viewers at home, if you're not familiar with Warren's work, to go back in our archives. We have an interview with him. We also have previous episodes with him.
After this video, there's the end screen, and all of those links are going to be clickable. I'll put something in the description, too, so that people can check out more Warren coverage. Let's crack these open.
And, of course, we didn't get into my comic book side of the collection when you came to my house. So here we are. This is to me, the primo stuff. Why don't we start with... There we go.
First off, how about those color sets, man? How do you do that? That nice chocolate brown into that sunset kind of sky?
Right, on the cover. And to me, what sets this cover off is the Watcher. Now, the Watcher is not your typical superhero. The Watcher is almost godlike, all right? And if that isn't a scared look on... Now, what could possibly scare a Watcher? And we're about to find out.
Yeah, man.
So, here we go. We're actually going to leaf through this.
And we have Warren flipping the pages because we've been criticized many a times for our handling of classic comics.
And by the way, they're my comics, and I'm allowed to do with my comics what I want.
Well said. Some context for anybody that's maybe coming from an alternative comics point of view or newer to comics. This is an apex for Marvel, is the Jack Kirby, Stanley run on Fantastic Four, and specifically... you know, give or take a year around this moment is kind of the apex of that run, where it just seems like Jack Kirby's bursting with ideas that form a lot of the basis and foundation of the Marvel Universe. Couple issues later, introduction of Black Panther, right. Inhumans shortly before this. And it just feels like he has hit a stride that maybe we've never seen in superhero comics before, possibly not since. You know, the other Marvel comic or high point in comics that you would compare is maybe the Ditko Stanley Spider-Mans in terms of beloved. But as Ed said, whenever I started reading comics, this is the run that was revered and out of my price range. But this is the classic team. Joe Sinnott rounding out the Stanley Jack Kirby by providing the inks, and phenomenal. We'll point those out as we're flipping through without a doubt, because it is a lot of people's favorite Kirby finisher. And it's because of these comics.
And it's my favorite Kirby finisher. So anyhow, and as Marvel did at those times, and by the way, bring back the reprint that you had, all right? And you know, just so everybody understands this, this reprint only reprinted the actual pages with just Galactus on them. It didn't reprint the entire comic.
Right? Well, that's one of the weird things about the way these comics read, is the first, like, we could just continue for a couple of pages, and they're wrapping up a story from a previous
issue. They're wrapping up the Inhumans. Yeah, exactly. And this is where the Inhumans, Maximus, goes ahead and sets up the Negative Zone.
Amazing. Look at that panel. Right there, it's this sequence is so strong.
Love the color. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is about as formally inventive as like color got back in 1966.
And look at, you know, Kirby was at his height at this point of equipment. All right. If you want a gun, or if you want to see a lab, or if you want to see a spaceship, all right, this was Kirby at his greatest.
Yeah, we're going to see some good examples when Galactus comes on the scene.
Exactly. So
let's get the Inhumans in their egg already, man, and talk some Galactus shit.
So now, and here, so the egg comes up, and who's a Crystal is caught, and Johnny Storm's all upset that can't get to his girlfriend. And your introduction to what's about to come are these two panels right here.
It's a great kind of transition. Just pull that camera back.
And here's your reprint version of this. So you see these two panels are intact, but a different splash composition.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's super interesting, man.
So and
look at the color on that.
I love it. The cosmos are so great.
And this is the introduction of the Silver Surfer. And you also have to understand, at the time, the Silver Surfer, you know, people were reading this on college campuses going, that's really cool. and if I'm not mistaken, Kirby, Lee tried to not have Silver Surfer in. I read some article somewhere that Kirby was like, well, I put this, you know, it was basically Kirby's thing to go ahead and put this in.
Yeah, you know, Stan Lee would write his 2-second synopsis and tell Kirby to go do his thing. And then this was like out of left field. So when Stan Lee gets the pages, he's got to really scrutinize those margin notes that Kirby left for him so that he knows what the heck to do with them. And frankly, like, if you read certain interviews and conversations with Kirby, like the treatment that Stan Lee put on top of this character with dialogue is not what Kirby had in mind at all. Like, what he had in mind was like a total kind of like autonomous, poker-faced android that you didn't know if it was just going to kill you or hug you or what.
The introduction of the Silver Surfer to all of comicsdom.
And that big third page panel size at the top. That's really the glory shot.
And this is great. So these are the Skrulls, and they're going, oh my God, it's the Silver Surfer. We know who's coming behind. We are getting out of here.
It's awesome, too, because there is a hierarchy, just like, you know, American military or something like this, where there's like the rookie who's like, ah, big deal. He's just a guy on a surfboard. And they're like, oh, you didn't read your galactic history. I love that shit. You know, like, there are the Stan Lee charms, you know what I'm saying? Like, he brings stuff to the table, no doubt.
Yeah, whenever he appears, it is certain that Galactus cannot be very far behind. Of course, at this point, no one has any idea what Galactus is or what threat it poses. All we know is that the Skrulls, who are not exactly the nicest people in the galaxy, are like, I'm
freaked
out of here.
Yeah,
they're totally freaked out.
Yeah, it's a great way to raise the stakes because you got this weird guy and, you know, that could be a threat unto itself. But right. No, there's a bigger threat.
There's a bigger threat. Well, like I said, you know, looking at the cover, look, just... The Watcher is like, oh my God, okay, you cannot believe what's about to hit us.
These are, in my notes, I have space gods, right? As Kirby goes on, yes. And it's just more and more of his work is about gods. But seeing something like Silver Surfer appear first, it really is that build of almost mythological, very, you know, Judeo-Christian idea of like, it's a symbol of what's to come.
It's an angel, okay? Is it an angel of death or is it an angel of goodness? And we don't know, because God would send us, you would never see God, you would only see the angels, right?
The messenger coming first. And then you turn the page and you see the sky consumed with flame. You're starting to put together those contextual clues and it is not a good sign.
Right.
And also, by the way, two suns, and I can't help but think of Star Wars, the twin sons of Tatooine, and George Lucas, Steve Spielberg, definite comic book marks. And if this is the apex of Marvel, makes me think they might have rested their eyes on it one
I
time.
Betcha. I'm sure. And of course, we don't know what's causing all these flames. All right.
And shit, the townspeople think that it's a human torch.
Yeah, exactly.
And through 66 issues, or no, through, what is it, 47 issues of Fantastic Four, Johnny Storm has been able to escape peril from Dr. Doom, from the Mole Man and all that, but the townspeople get a regular old garden hose and dispatch of his punk ass.
That's an awesome panel, though, with the chaos of the regular people against the fantastic backdrop.
This would be my argument whenever I would be at art school and the instructors are, like, docking you because you're not putting all your human figures on the exact perspective plane. I would bust out the treasury, show this, and be like, yeah, well, neither did Kirby. Go back to drawing your Archie comics.
Right. So, you know, here's the poor human torch. Now, of course, human beings, what they are thoroughly panicking. They have no idea what's going on. They as it is even today, they find the nearest scapegoat and go ahead and go after him. And the thing has to come down and save Johnny Storm, who gets taken out by a fire hose.
Look at the engineering on this little vehicle. Like, that's insane, man. It looks the same in multiple angles.
And that crowd reaction, too, is part of that build toward the biblical, you know, the biblical epic proportions of this story and that sense of it's the end of the world. Like, people are losing their minds.
Well, you know, you go back to the Old Testament, and that's what happened when they constructed the golden calf, all right? Everyone panicked because Moses didn't come back down from the mountain and all kinds of stuff like that. And in the absence of any direction, without a threat, they just went bananas.
Yeah, you see this in like more contemporary fiction, and that would be the time where you would have your soapbox pulpit guys creating religions on some corner over here, and you would have, you know, people sacrificing their children over there, just all sorts of stuff.
And just imagine with social media today what would happen if all of a sudden the sky turned to fire. Right? It would be totally... And by the way, I always loved It's Clobberin' Time.
Once again, another one of those, you know, Stan Lee contributions, having these little taglines and stuff.
It's the cartooning power, too. If you're doing, say, photorealistic, photo-referenced work, you can't insert a panel like that. You know, like this whole style that is going on in Marvel Universe at the time is this ability to have cartoony elements, you know, to take these characters and bend them around, entertain us the way a cartoon would entertain us next to these ideas that are much bigger and, you know... Hard to pull that off. Like, style can limit that.
When Ben Grimm comes to save Johnny Storm, like, there's real world examples of this right here, where you have Thing coming to save the day, and you have the, you know, Brooklyn Brawler type, like trying to test them. You see all these videos, man, of like some MMA fighter trying to get a drink at a bar and some drunk frat boys coming up to him fucking with him. I like the shit right here, man. I'll belt you in the LaBonza.
and also, Thap, Plink.
Let me see. Artie Simon gimmicks, man. We're gonna see plenty.
And all right, so next page, here we go. Anyhow, so Silver Surfer comes back. Further and further travels the strange space wanderer, riding the shockwaves, the rolling gases across countless light years, heading in the direction of the Milky Way, in which nestles our own solar system and the planet Earth.
Yeah, so like what we saw, man, was obfuscation. They're trying, it's the Watcher. He's trying to shield us from the Silver Surfer.
And the Watcher's next trick is to go ahead and put rocks up there to hope that this hides everything from the Silver Surfer.
This doesn't age very well right here, this Sue Storm gimmick.
Yeah, it's you would, how about this, anybody tries this today, they've got a problem on their hands. This is very mid-1960s, right? Sue, darling, you can't come in now, not yet, but you've been working for hours without food, without rest. I won't stand for it. This whole subservient view of the world is elegantly dated, as the case may be.
Also relatively defined by the comics code, right? This is your American values need to be upheld and shown in these kinds of relationships. So very wholesome family roles defined here.
Right, exactly.
That said, I like the detail of Richard's. He says he's been working in there nonstop. How do you show that? Put some stubble on his chin.
Exactly. And there, perhaps I can explain.
Amazing.
And you know, like I said, this is the time period where Kirby was just really knocking it out of the ballpark with whatever equipment was needed for that particular panel.
With all the stuff that we give Kirby credit for, you know, his sort of design acumen, his quirky figures and stuff, I never, like, lighting never comes into the conversation, but there are many examples in this trilogy
we'll
of issues.
Keep pointing them out. That's a great one.
And this is one of them. It makes me think of, like, maybe it's, like, a little bit of stink left on him from, like, when Wally Wood was inking him on what was the space?
That's not Wally Wood.
Wally Wood inks a couple. There's two other Wood brothers, but then Wally Wood.
Wood and Kirby did. Yeah. So, and here, by the way, we're now 16 pages into the story, and finally, all right? True, the danger is too great. The time, the Silver Surfer is on the way. He is the advance scout for Galactus. Galactus who drains entire planets of their elements, then leaves them dry, unable to support life. And so, 16 pages in is when we finally get the first mention of Galactus. We don't see him yet, but we get the first mention.
As we progress with learning more about Galactus and everything, like, it really speaks to the kind of black and white nature of boys' comics at this time, because it's a guy who's just, for self-preservation, has to eat dinner. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could handle that in a sympathetic way, but the heavy-handed kind of Stan Lee dialogue, he's letting you know that he ain't a good fella.
No, he's not a good fella.
You know, like when you and I go eat a hamburger, we're not talking shit on the cow, but Galactus kind of is.
Well, but there is a nuance in there, all right? Once Galactus, you know, comes down, so I don't want to get too far ahead, but again, here, look at the concern on the Watcher's face. And as we all know, as we talked about a few minutes ago, you know, the Watcher is not without their own power. So, all right. And by the way, these ads is originally printed. You gotta love these things.
We're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to get that mail order mysteries book, and we're gonna have to just like do a full episode on that.
Okay. See television in thrilling colors. Only $2.98. That's a whole other conversation.
And you know what that is? That's probably a gel that you put on the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a little piece of plastic. That's like a yellow piece
like
of
a
plastic.
Prism.
And back then, color TVs were very expensive. You know, the typical middle class family at this point still didn't really have, you know, color TVs, or it was just starting to get into the middle class.
There's interesting drawing stuff with this introduction of Silver Surfer, because clearly Kirby is not putting on, you know, like the fake tidy whiteys or whatever on him. So he's doing everything he can to kind of like obscure like that hip region from the back and the front, which is kind of interesting. It makes me actually think of manga whenever they show, like on a Ryuichi Ikigami comic, when there's naked people, how they just kind of blur it out, like just don't even draw it. We're going to see a lot of examples of that. Like this is one to me where it's just like show no pronounced butt cheeks, because when we send this to the comics code, they're just going to white it out anyhow.
Yes, and it's also very interesting because, you know, how do you then communicate a white unit, you know, unitard as the case may be? There's no precedence for this kind of thing in comics.
Yeah.
Where you're all one color, top to bottom.
And that also speaks to angels and stuff too. Like they're kind of not asexual, but just they have no discernible.
Yeah. Right. They are asexual and they're in white. They're, you know, all angels are always in white. And so this is kind of, well, he's an angel, but on behest of what?
This is one of those comic tricks, too. Like, I used to marvel at this as a kid when I'd be, like, trying to copy a drawing or something. The metallic look, it's so simple. It's that light blue and white and, you know, some squiggly black marks. And it would look so, it looks so good here, but it's like, I would never have come up with that formula for, like, doing a metallic shiny kind of thing in black and white, or even black and white in four color. Makes so much sense. It's comics, you know, standard comics, but amazing effect.
And you know what's bad? This is great. Disregarding the humans with utter and complete disdain, right? Mm-hmm. So just they're we're not even worth looking at.
Yeah, right? You're gnats, man.
All right, now we get.
There's another amazing lighting version for the Watcher.
Yeah, that double lighting gimmick, man. That's total like Wally Wood energy.
Now, also, this is an important plot point where because he was so because Silver Surfer was so arrogant, didn't see the thing coming, and so underestimated what it was the thing could do, and he just let one go. And I don't know about you, that's gonna sting.
Yeah, like exit Silver Surfer for the rest of the issue, I think, man.
And right, and then we get to this, and this is one of those pages where, as I was reading this, like I said, I was 14 at the time when I first read this, and you get to this page and you're like, I've never seen anything like this before. What is this? And you realize this is a combination of photography and art collage together.
Yeah, and then you know, slap on the weird color separations of early comics. And I always loved the overprinting when you could see the magenta over the black.
Yes, that's a piece of Marvel Comics history that I don't know, is whether or not this is the first time he tried to do this. So if anybody out there, chime up on the message boards underneath the video and correct us.
Yes.
So, like I said, so me, you know, you're 14, you're reading, oh my God, what's this thing that's coming? And you hit this and you realize that, oh my God, we're in deep doo-doo.
It's incredible if this is his first attempt at this. Because, like, it's perfect, right? We're describing a god, like, how do you do it? Bring in an entirely different visual vernacular to describe this thing that's way beyond human and even human comprehension.
Yeah, and this is all Galactus' equipment. And as
I'd love to know what Stan Lee's reaction is when he's going through these pages and he's like, what? Sis, you put some of your junk mail in here, Jack. What is this?
We can't pay you the full rate for this, true believer.
And here he is. I love this. My journey is ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speaks Galactus. Now you know you're in deep trouble.
Amazing costume design. Crazy colors.
Yeah.
Crazy colors on this. They're gonna figure that out, you know, next issue.
Next issue, right, exactly. So he does change. I love the G. Now, of course, the G biblically also stands for Goliath.
Here we go.
All right. So, you know, I'm not going to say that Kirby was influenced or anything like that. Just by coincidence or what have you, there is this biblical analog that no one thought that.
It's incredible to think of the list of stuff that is does influence Kirby. Because you have myth, presumably you have religion and the stories that go along with these various religions, and sci-fi all just in him, you know, in these stories that he makes.
Yeah, I don't think it's this one. I think it's the next one.
Yeah. Right. So cool letters show up in these pages.
And the little in-house ads, and there was just and by the way, this was a different feel than the DC Comics, straight down the line.
Yeah, I mean, just like with kind of cool dialogue and stuff, like the DC Comics at the time, first off, it's the same story every issue of every comic. Like Green Lantern does his one thing, Superman does his one thing.
Right.
plug in a different villain. Lois is still trying to figure out who the heck Superman is every issue. And he still has to hide who he is from Lois every issue. But this stuff is...
The other thing for the G on Galactus, of course, is God. Like, if you're just a random kid watching this, there's a lot you could read out of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know it's bad when you have Galactus and the Silver Surfer coming after you.
What an iconic cover.
All of these, man.
They really are, yeah.
So here we go. Now we get into the meat.
They do a good job with these covers with scale. Like, the Fantastic Four just is so much smaller than everybody.
That's the crazy thing. Like, when we get into this, man, the scale is kind of all over the place. Like, Kirby has to... This is his first giant god. Like, he's got to figure out, just through drawing enough times, like, how to make that work.
And the dialogue, just this one panel of this. Galactus has landed on Earth. Any additional words of ours would simply pull beside the awesome portent of that one staggering phrase. Galactus has landed on Earth, and humanity itself totters on the brink of doomsday.
You could imagine a little dude with this comic rolled up in his back pocket on his Schwinn, just like on a up next to a tree, like pulling this out and just like riveted.
Love the little bit of sky twilight colors in the background. This would have scared me if I read it at a certain age. You know, like I would watch those terrible black and white movies that aren't scary at all and still be scared of them. If I had this when I was 6 or 7, it would have been like right from church to this, just freaked out.
But also, if you were a little older, think about this. You know, up until this point, superheroes were it. All right, so they were the top dogs. And all of a sudden, maybe they're not top dogs. And this is really important.
Yeah, this is the universe part of Marvel.
Right, and I'm sorry, the face-off between Galactus and the Watcher. And all we can do, all they can do, is just watch. And see these two big heavyweights of the universe face off against one another.
And see, this is the scale stuff that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, thing is right there next to this dude with no pants on his upper thigh.
Punching him in the ankle. That part about the Fantastic Four watching makes me think of how do you put the reader in the same position as... Because the Fantastic Four aren't Spider-Man. You know, they're not a kid. They're sort of like your parents or something like that. And now suddenly they're reduced to you. Like, they're as helpless as you are as a reader.
And these people, let me see. So let's say he's 6 foot. These are both 20 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but before this, Save the Monsters from the old, you know, the pre-superhero Marvels, you didn't see anything this big.
Right.
So
this is one of my favorite panels of the issue, man. Just the physics of that little smoke bomb.
It helps that everybody's selling it.
Totally.
You know, like, they're all going away from where that is coming out of the source of it.
And I just love
this
kind of stuff that Kirby comes up with, man.
That's great. That's great. Even Plastic Man didn't do that.
And it is, it's like your quilt, like, you put this on your backpack when you're going hiking or something like that. Like, all those, like, you know what those marks are.
Now, of course, this is one of the things that bugs my mind. So the thing just gave Galactus, like, you know, one of his super punches, nothing. And so Johnny Storm's like, oh, let me try.
It's that youthful bravado, man.
Holy Hannah. He's just standing there absorbing the flame like it's nothing. This is great. I'm sorry. One of my favorite phrases. You puny human gnats can be more annoying than I had supposed. And so... Think about this. We are nothing more than insects to this person. And that concept, we're going to forget his size, forget everything else, but just the way that the human race is viewed is something I had never seen before. Now science fiction, if you read in that genre, that comes up, but not in comic books.
And you could, I mean, take commercial flights and stuff, and you could kind of almost relate to it when you get high enough in the sky and you could look down and still see some humanity happening down there. It's like, you know, it's kind of an ant farm.
And, of course, they have to go back and huddle. They don't know they're like, we don't know what to do, so we need to kind of drop back. And in the meantime...
This is a piece that Chris Claremont brought up on our shoot interview with him, where he was talking about the influence of this story and trying to inject any kind of humanity into your comics where you can get it. And he's talking about, like, you know, these guys are fighting somebody, you know, against all odds, and Reed Richards decides to shave because today's his last day, he wants to, you know,
wants to look good.
Yeah.
Reminds me of The Hustler, like at the end of the opening scene that they've been playing pool all night. Jackie Gleason goes in the bathroom and just basically refreshes himself, comes out ready to keep playing.
It's one of those tenets too, where it's like, you know, no matter how you feel when you get up, like you got to make your bed. Got to make your bed, man.
And so now what happened to Silver Surfer from last day shift? Getting clobbered by the thing, falls conveniently enough on a skylight overlooking the thing's girlfriend's art studio, Alicia.
Yeah, who's blind but is always looking at him in every panel.
Such a great page, the whole sequence. And the way he draws Silver Surfer's face always amazes me because he looks like both alien and human.
Yeah.
It almost defies, like, I don't know how another artist shows up and is like, oh, I can draw Silver Surfer too.
Well, and right here, this is also very interesting because we don't know this, but there's a bit of, I shouldn't say humanity inside Nora, as we find out much later, Nora and Rad, the Silver Surfer. But when Alicia starts talking to him about these kinds of earthbound emotions, they aren't swatted away as Galactus would do. So
these are the pages, too, by the way, that Kirby would cite as, like, you know, Stan Lee kind of manipulating his character into being something that he didn't intend it to be.
I think that warmth is a good choice, as opposed to him being, you know, a cold android.
Yeah.
And here, oh, go ahead.
Stan Lee takes it far. When it's the Silver Surfer series,
right,
he takes it way far to a weak extreme.
So here, getting back to Kirby's great construction methods, the Galactus, of course, he needs a machine to go. Of course he would.
This is pots and pans to a Galactus, man.
Yeah. And so this machine has to be constructed, and in a way it's also a plot device to buy time. Because, you know, if it was just a real god, the real god would come along, stick his hands in the dirt, suck everything away, and we're gone. And it's a wonderful plot device.
I also love seeing, like, Fantastic Four is always looking up. It's another bit of selling that scale.
Yeah, however, before the determined, dedicated trio can reach their objective, they're trying to go ahead and destroy everything. The Watcher has another plan.
It doesn't do much watching, this Watcher.
No, not this one in particular.
And then he just stops on a dime. Like, he's like, I'll do so much.
Right.
But you got to do the rest now.
And let's see. With an effortless wave of his hand, the somber, towering figure causes a screen of light to appear on the wall. And so here, the Watcher is basically saying, if you're going to go after somebody this big, you need a big stick, and we're going to show you how to get the big stick, and Human Torch has to go and do this.
That's that Joseph Campbell hero's journey kind of stuff, man. Take the little Luke Skywalker naive boy, send him on a, you know, life-saving mission.
Well, and beforehand, the Watcher is basically saying, okay, you need to understand what you're up against, so this is what this particular device is going to do once it's constructed. And look at what's about to happen to your planet. And all of a sudden, they're like, we got a problem here. Alas, it is in place that only the Human Torch can reach. Since I am forbidden to actively participate, of course, there's a legalistic view. It's like, actively participating, if you tell him where the device is and how to get there, how is that not actively participating?
It's another really good alien design. That's almost human or humanoid, but clearly something different. You could read this story as Galactus metaphor for technology and technology ravaging the environment and planet.
Well, and also at the time, this is around the time when the environmental stuff started to come about. There was a lot of smog in the cities. There was a lot of pollution, although now we have it again. And now we're back to,
there goes the Surfer Generals. They just figured that out later. You know, these little crotch pieces.
Right. And so while this is all going on, while Alicia is trying to convince this thing that no one's ever seen before of the humanity, then they switch again to the different perspective of what's happening out on the streets.
There's cool visual storytelling here too, by the way, because this is the panel where, you know, he's sated now. You know, he showed up weak, showed up gaunt, screwed up. She hooked him up with some food, and this is his power stance. You know, he's ready to get back in action.
Yes, I love this. Destroy is merely a word. We simply change things.
And so this gets back to this whole thing about entropy and, you know, the universe being in balance and things like that. It's like we're just part of the process of birth and death in the universe. You're going to die and Galactus is going to live, and that's just the way it is.
Perfect, too, in that he's doing that. You know, he's the small model version of this, right? Like, yes. He's shown up and gotten sustenance the same way. It's like, that's what Galactus is here to
that's
do.
That's what Galactus is here to do, right, exactly. And of course, you know, the panic, all right? It isn't a robot atop the Baxter building. It's the giant is alive, I tell you. He's alive. Even the authorities are at a loss for what to do. Now, trust me, all right? Galactus comes in 21st century America and sits atop, let's say, the Chrysler building in New York and starts building this thing. We're talking full-blown worldwide panic.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know,
we can see what the military's been up to the last 50 years.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And again, you know, just this almost throwaway panel here with this great piece of equipment.
That whole page is amazing. Like, the crowd shot to me is wonderful. Seeing all the different faces.
I love that red color on those foreground faces.
Yeah. And then, of course, the media. And, of course, now everyone would have their phones up. And, you know, of course, it was a different time. People didn't even have cell phones back then, no less smartphones.
They didn't even have a second phone in their
house. They didn't have a second phone in the house, right. And that phone they had was wired into the wall. Now, Ben, to buy some more time, goes and tries to break it up.
Does pretty well here.
Yes. Yeah.
We're going to get to that Alex Ross panel.
And I always loved this. Pretty much every issue had these toy soldiers. And as a little kid, I was like, you know, because I still have actually all my toy soldiers. But somewhere in the back of my mind, even as a little kid, I had this funny feeling that if I got these 100 soldiers for a buck and a quarter, they'd be pretty terrible soldiers.
I bid on one of these ads. I don't know if it was this one exactly, but they were literally like the pieces were like this big.
Oh.
They weren't like the little green soldier guys or anything. They were terrible, really bad.
They were just bilking
money.
And
if you had a kid sibling, when you had these, it had to be the deadliest toy that you could ship.
This is great. Packed in this footlocker toy storage box. I can just imagine the piece of cardboard that thing is.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. All right, so...
Galactus Richards, man. Yeah. I love that. Just any opportunity to stretch him out.
That stuff's great. Think about, we're just looking at like the crowd human pages, and then you get panels like this in the same story one page later.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Kayfabers at home, man. This is the reason why in your Wizard magazine, that issue of Amazing Spider-Man 129 or whatever it was, said first appearance of Punisher, Roman numeral 2, because this is Punisher 1.
That's
right,
Punisher
here.
1, right, exactly. And here, and here's where the Watcher and Johnny Storm get together and send Johnny Storm on the single most amazing journey he ever went on, period, end of statement. A certain object that may stop Galactus.
And again, it's Kirby. How do you represent this? You're going to be traveling through like time, space, into different dimensions.
Yeah, this was just a great sequence. I love this. Yeah. And then you get to Galactus's home world, which is pretty much what you would expect.
It's so bizarre, and it's great to see like the planet, moons or something orbiting this like giant technical space.
And of course, you know, once you see this, I also love this, okay? You are passing through the celestial barriers known as unlife. To touch them is to perish. And so he's got to kind of wind his way through all of these strands. It's almost like string theory stuff that if you touch these strands of unreality, you are toast, just to make it much more interesting. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. When I saw that panel when I was 14, I was like, this is really cool.
Did the name Jack Kirby resonate with you back then?
No.
Or you're just into characters and interesting-looking comics?
I really liked Fantastic Four. This was my buddy had all the Marvels, so I read all of them. And this is the one that drew me, was Fantastic Four. And so I assembled a collection when I was in college. As I said before in a previous interview, they all got sold. But then in the mid-90s, my buddy was getting rid of his collection of FFs, starting with number 4.
and I think I paid him $1,000. I think just my issue number 5, the first Dr. Doom, is worth a couple of grand just on its own. Not that I'd ever sell it. I haven't sold it in this years. So anyway, so we've got the first Punisher.
It's so dope. Like, you really feel the weight with those speed lines up top, and just the way he sells it on the ground. It just feels like plunk, you know?
He looks so heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course the...
this would be Rick Steiner as a wrestler.
Totally, man. Yeah, just like a little... dog face gremlin.
And of course everybody's like, oh, we can take this little thing.
Yeah, right.
It's just a little robot. We're, you know, we can do this. And all of a sudden it's not so easy.
Wait till our guy turns it on.
Yeah, right. There we go.
I just love that so much, man.
it's another, like, there's a half a dozen examples or more of Kirby doing these kind of things in this series where it's like, how do you represent this super fighting machine?
Well, but also...
so good.
Think about what he was doing to say that, all right, well, so we've got this super galactic thing. What kind of machine, what kind of Punisher would they have? How would it operate? It's like, well, it would be certainly be stronger and faster than everybody else, so how do you show that?
It's great. And that's another great Richards, all stretched out and, like, overwhelmed.
That pose is really awesome.
Enough, loyal one.
Back to the ship. So just comes down, beats the fuck out of him.
Beats the fuck out of him,
and
right.
And then heads right back home.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything. That guy's great.
This is great. You was right, Stretch. The run's taken off. We don't have to worry about him no more, but I sure would like to take another crack at him. Never mind the Punisher. Galactus is still our main objective.
Speaks to Kirby. Just like, I'm going to introduce this guy for a couple of pages. And even like that previous issue, there's the Inhumans and Maximus. Like all these, he's just putting a lot of stuff in there. He's keeping the kids interested, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. This is great. And how are you going to get rid of Galactus? He's still assembling his equipment. Now, of course, you also figure a god would have much easier assembled equipment than this. But like I said... and then we're back to Silver Surfer.
Man, it's another stellar page.
And it ends with interesting stakes. You know, the first Galactus was a problem, but now we have an autonomous thinking Silver Surfer. Like, he could be a problem.
Yes. Yeah. So there are now three main points that's going on here. And this is great because the Watcher senses this. He doesn't see this, but he senses this, that there's been a, a disturbance in the Force.
Yeah.
Okay?
Very well said. And it's nice to have this sequence from a story standpoint, so if you're reading it at home, if you're a little kid reading this, you're not going to miss the significance of what is going on now.
Right, and you're going to want to read this
there
next issue.
There are cosmic powers going awry on Earth.
And this is great. Without meaning to, the Silver Surfer may himself be the total cause of Earth's total destruction. That's great.
Yeah, that's how you. That's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. So I was ready to read the next issue. Force, I didn't have to. And by the way, I've never seen any of these shirts, but I'd buy one in a heartbeat.
Yeah, for sure, man. Those things are all ratty. You don't want them used, man.
No.
Right. But I would have bought this shirt. So I can just imagine for $1.50 what they would have been done. Would have been done like, let me see, was this one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, Dave Cockrum, yeah.
Yeah, got a letter from Dave Cockrum in here, and there's going to be a letter showing up in the next one, too, which is really cool. And it's just, you know, it's just total fanboy stuff. You know, talking about his love of the Inhumans, Black Bolt, whatever.
Yeah, so, and but it showed this really interesting engagement, because you know, at this point, he's not 10.
There's this guy right here.
It also is such the DNA for, like, what Cockrum becomes, you know, yes. The way he does superhero art. It's like, oh yeah, of course this is what he's formative years.
Kenneth Kirby, 140 Banner Way, Pittsburgh, PA. I took a drive there yesterday.
Really?
Just for the hell of it. It's off of Butler and 42nd Street in Lawrenceville.
Wow, that's cool.
It crossed my mind to knock on the door and ask if any Kirbys live there.
All right, so on to the final issue. You know, Record Riot. By the way, a lot of these songs are pretty lame.
Oh, amazing, sure, like the Columbia House scam going back in the 60s.
Yeah, those things all sucked ass anyhow, too.
All right, here we go. The Startling Saga of the Silver Surfer. And at last, the Human Torch in college. One of the great bizarre transitions in all of comics.
Yeah, just the way these comics are structured is just ridiculous. Like,
it's one of the things that stood out to me
reading this week because I always read the Treasury edition. That's so when it was like, all right, pull these out and just read these three issues. It's bizarre. I mean, we'll point it out as we get to like halfway through this issue and things are shifting around.
Well, the whole beginning where the first thing. Five pages were finishing up the Inhumans.
I think it's really cool that, you know, Kirby doesn't stretch it out. Like when, all right, the story's done. Still got five pages to fill. Let's do some new shit.
So here, this is the beginning of Silver Surfer turning against Galactus. Master, for the first time I realize the dreadful enormity of what you plan to do. You must not tamper with other worlds. You cannot destroy the entire human race. And this, the response is great. Would you hesitate to tread upon an anthill? These creatures are of no consequence to Galactus.
Just, they're, you know, just, you're just fodder. It does, you do not matter.
It's good characterization for Galactus. Yes. And there's a little bit more of it as we go through this issue. But it's interesting that you have this character, and yet he still has that characterization really well defined from an early appearance and as a unique kind of character that's outside. All you really need is that he's this god, but they do more.
Right. And of course, you know, this whole thing establishes Darkseid and Thanos. And so without this, you do not get to those beings, as the case may be. So that's one of the reasons why this was so groundbreaking.
Kirby talks about on the Masters of Comic Art VHS tape, he describes Galactus as one of the old gods. And after he created this trilogy, his thoughts were like, well, who are the new gods? But he was saving that. He was saving
that. Right, he was saving that for DC, which was only, what, 3.5 years later he went over. This is a 66.
Yeah.
So, and here, you know, and of course, we don't know the power of the Silver Surfer. And all of a sudden, it becomes really clear. And by the way, Galactus doesn't know the power of the Silver Surfer. This is one of the really interesting things, because Galactus did what he did. It's like, okay, you're going to be my herald. Here are your powers. And that was that, because he thought he was in total control. And all of a sudden, he's not in total control. I love this. Master, say we may leave this world. My heart grieves at battling one with whom I shared a universe.
More great colors, man, to sell this whole sequence.
And some of these names, Absorbishield, right? This is just so...
That's like a remnant of the 50s, man. That weird futurism.
But it's so Kirby in the way he would name things, okay? And we'll see that in a couple more pages, which with another weapon.
Yeah. You see it right here, Destructogen.
Destructogen, yeah. Bless of Solo Destructogen. It's like, what? It's like, you know, the negative force that encased the Inhumans. And of course, the weird part about that was that Reed Richards knew what that was.
Yeah.
So
notice how all the characters are off balance with the exception of Galactus.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Good observation.
Very perpendicular, strong base.
Yeah, he's like, you just, you know, I don't care what you do.
There's an iconic panel, right?
Yeah.
Kirby fingers and the energy's coming out of them.
Yeah, you got
another cool light.
That's great. Yeah, I love this panel going through it this week. That one stood out to me. That's beautiful.
And this is also great because, as for me, I do not stand silent, motionless due to lack of concern. Long have I cherished a stumbling, bumbling, but always aspiring human race. Yea, even as I utter these words, I am in mental contact with the Human Torch. He's guiding the Human Torch through, of course, his prime directive of not interfering. Just kind of, he kind of legally overstepped that bound just a little bit. And he comes back.
You know, with all the pages that Kirby had to churn out, you know, this month, when you get these celestial kind of things, man, that shaves a little time off your day when it comes to ruling out perspective lines or straight edges for these buildings and things.
Right. And I love this. Here is Johnny Storm. He just came back and he's in shock. Right? He just cannot. I traveled through worlds so big. There aren't any words. Right? We're like ants, just like ants. Now this is getting back to Galactus's view of what the humans really are, at least to Galactus.
Then pulls out the foreign object out of the tights.
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder this concept, because it's pretty good writing to have this from different characters' point of view, like bringing this up. How much of that is Kirby's notes? How much of it's Stan Lee?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd love to know that, but that's not sure. Most of history.
Just got to see the original page, man.
Yeah.
and margin notes.
And here, you must never turn the control lever to full power. Could erase the entire solar system in 1 microsecond.
It's a little atomic bomb.
Oh my
dialogue.
God. Well, and also the if you think about the scale of what's being discussed here, to have a weapon that could evaporate a solar system that quickly, it changes everything.
Richards looks like he's thinking about it too. I gotta get into this technology.
As the Silver Surfer and Galactus battle, Reed Richards comes up, and I'm sorry, the ultimate nullifier in the hands of a human.
Yes. I love it. Love the panel. Love the whole thing.
One of my fave panels in all of comics is that one right there. That all of a sudden, this being that had no fear whatsoever, there was nothing in the universe could scare him, and there's something that scares him.
And it's so small and tiny. It makes me think about, like, whenever you read about, you know, some person who got poisoned by, you know, micrograms of arsenic. Yeah. And it's like, so a drop of something can kill you? You know, that's essentially what that is. It's a little tiny piece
of
nothing.
And on that point, it says, in the name of the eternal cosmos, put it down. Your feeble mind cannot begin to comprehend its power. You hold the means to destroy a galaxy and lay waste to a universe. And it's getting back to this whole scale and scope of all of a sudden, where are the superheroes placed in the universe? And that just changed for in comics forever.
The scale is that thing that's so hard to do in storytelling, not just comics, but anything. You know, like this kind of cosmic scale, really hard to communicate that.
Well, and they did it well in both the dialogue and mm-hmm. also the vastness of what we saw in terms of not only the size of Galactus, but also what Johnny Storm went through to get the ultimate nullifier. I love this. You did this. Only you have the power. Only you had the will. You've given a match to a child who lives in a tinderbox.
I love that Galactus knows everything that exists on Earth, man. He knows about gnats, matches, tinderboxes. He's well studied.
Yeah, so here it kind of gets reconciled, and Silver Surfer has a price to pay for betraying his master, who, by the way, is, at this point, the baddest badass that ever existed in the universe. There was no... And this is the other thing people have to remember is that this is the top of the food chain. And superheroes are no longer the top of the food chain. And it stayed that way for a while. I think the big change came when New Gods came along. And then all of a sudden, there was this other story about, as you were saying, the New Gods. But for 4 years, this was it. This was the top of the food chain. This is what everybody was afraid of in the galaxy.
It's good context. It's really good context, especially when you're looking at a panel like this and thinking about, once again, how do you draw that?
How do you draw
the thing that's the top of the galaxy after 5 years of these superheroes? It's incredible. But also the Surfer, you know, paying a price. Ed and I were talking about this story this week, and it's like they do so well with stakes. You know, a lot of comics, it's like you read a Superman comic. Look, Superman's going to come out of this hole. Yeah. We all know it. There's no real... To communicate that kind of threat is really hard and challenging. This story does it, and it's the same kind of deal. It's not like Fantastic Four are going to die. At least I don't think anybody reading this would really expect that to happen. But there's a real sense of stakes here, and Silver Surfer pays a price that they establish in these 3 issues.
Yes.
You know, he talks about soaring the universe, with sharing the universe with Galactus. Not anymore.
Yeah. And he, Silver Surfer, did pay the ultimate sacrifice for us.
There was a conversation we had a couple episodes ago where we were talking about a Gil Kane, Robert Crumb conversation that Gary Groth moderated at a comic convention in the 1980s. And Kane was talking about Kirby, how at a certain point Kirby's, the hyperbole of Kirby's drawing and storytelling got to a place where he could no longer deal with, you know, bank robbers and saboteurs and stuff, and this would probably be very close to that point.
Well, yeah, and you raise a good point, because by this point, Kirby's been doing comics for a quarter of a century. And you have to get tired of doing this much more mundane stuff.
You know what's really cool, man, is this is way before that flexographic technology when it comes to printing. So there are very, very razor thin Joe Sinnott lines here that just looking at them here, like, and knowing comics in the 80s and stuff, like, those would have just been those little wormy noodles. Also, these kind of marks right here, that's the stuff that, like, Don Simpson's art starts to adopt. Like, when he starts to do his kind of pastiche of Silver Age, he would put those little dabs in there. Well, you'll see it a lot in the 1963s that we covered.
Yeah, and here, basically, it's the face-off between the Silver Surfer and the Thing, because Alicia, Silver Surfer is like, Alicia and Silver Surfer, it's not so much they had a thing, but there was something about Silver Surfer that, though Alicia was blind, there was something that really touched her.
Yeah, there's some really good pathos in the drawings of, like, Thing on the outside,
Thing
away from these two staring at each other, facing each other.
Facing each other, yeah, sure.
And then the walk-off, man, back to the curtain.
This is kind of a funny panel of her.
Yeah.
Ben, where are you?
And this is great. Silver Surfer, now his regret is coming in. Was born to soar, to ride the currents of space, not to be confined within a barren structure. Though the pathways to the stars are now denied to me, my place is still in the skies above. And so he's got nothing better to do now than to investigate Earth.
And he'll do it in a very solemn and salty way for
the
next 30 years.
And within just a couple of panels...
That's pretty appropriate for a modern context, man.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Publisher calls Galactus a hoax.
Yeah. Very 23rd decade, 21st century, where you deny what's right in front of your eyes. It's like, I see it, but I deny it.
Yeah, this is where things just get strange, right? As you continue reading this issue, we've just read the biggest superhero epic of our life. What? We're at football practice? What's happening?
And once again, this is like another one of those transformative things that was important to Chris Claremont and his storytelling approach with X-Men comics. Like, I like this stuff. Yeah. Pepper it in with your superhero.
Yeah.
It's the blueprint for the ongoing comic. You know, having these subplots, having new characters coming in, keeping moving. It's Wrestling Weekly Show, you know, where it's like you got to have, like, what can you do with this new character? But it's funny to see it here because comics have gone so far away from this kind of model where everything is write it for the collection, not here. Here it's like write it for next month.
Yeah, sure. And before we move on, I wanted to point out that, of course, the publisher that denied Galactus was the Daily Bugle.
Yeah.
Right? J. Jonah Jameson.
Keeping things within the Marvel Universe.
Within the Marvel Universe, exactly. All right. And by the way, these other newspapers were not papers that were in New York City. The Evening News, there wasn't one. The Daily, whatever that was, unless it was the Daily News, doesn't count. But yes, all of a sudden, you're switched to a football practice.
We got to introduce Wyatt Wingfoot. And all's right with the universe, man. Reed's going back to working on
shit. Here's some more. My printed circuit projecto analyzer. So... we now call that, AI looking at images. Turn your hands into explosive defense mechanisms. Well, maybe Ben Grimm could use that. So here we go.
The ordering the pets in the mail always, I feel like that's one of those ads that doesn't hold up well.
No, definitely not. Well, and here... Of course, you know, one of the things about the Thing was that the way he looked and how people responded to him. And here's just a whole page to emphasize what an outsider the Thing really is just because of what he looked like.
It's an emoji for a face. You know, like that brow is so upturned.
Yes.
He helped save the day. He helped save the universe. And he, like Rodney Dangerfield, gets no respect.
Yeah, and
once again, another walk-off panel, man. That's
and this is great. Now I recognize you, the Thing. It's like, well, wait a minute. What is it about this person? I mean, I can understand if just some person walked out, but it's like this big Rocky thing. Who else did you think he could have been?
If you don't think it's the Thing, aren't you running as fast as you can the other direction?
All right, here we go.
Nine-panel grid is one, you know, it's kind of cool to see Kirby doing a nine-panel grid.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the whole thing about this is to show the tragedy of the Thing.
Right.
Yeah, we're building up, man, to this man, this monster. That's going to actually... That's next issue.
That's next issue, right. And
holy
then,
shit.
And by the way, then the issue after that is Black Panther. So to me, these five issues changed comics history. From FF48 to 52, I don't know that within the 1960s context, you could find five issues, or any issues, any five issues from any run, that would change comics as much as these five issues did.
Incredible. Incredible two panels.
Well, and here it is. He's now going, you know, he's got to go back to college, and he's sitting there going, I just flew the cosmos to get the ultimate nullifier at Galactus's homeworld, and I'm sitting in college?
Good luck finding the lecturer that can keep up with that.
There was a famous story. There was a producer by the name of Tom Dowd who worked for Atlantic Records, and he worked on the Los Alamos project. When he came out of college, he went to get his physics degree and wanted to not have to go through all the introductory courses, but he couldn't tell them what it was he did to be able to get out of there. And so he said, screw physics, I'm going into music, and went down that road. So there's an analog here in real life that this guy did this amazing thing, worked on the atomic bomb, and couldn't tell anybody and had to go down a normal path.
It's interesting. You'll find examples of people that do that make these abrupt changes. Sometimes it's an athlete, right, that retires young enough that they can go on to do something more spectacular. Yeah. Always amazing to think of these people that find that second act.
Right, right.
And, you know, their best stuff still lies ahead whenever they're... Kirby's kind of an example of that. When you think of his age when he's creating these comics, it's kind of like, man, everybody, think of whoever his peers are. Most of them are... burning out at it 20 years into comics, and instead he's creating the Marvel Universe at that point. I love the panel variation here. It's something I think about all the time when I'm drawing comics, is does the panel border say something about what's happening, you know, on that page or in that comic? And it's kind of cool to see Kirby throwing in a panel like that.
Well, and also, if you think about it, here we are. We're now going back to the two issues before this. To revisit what was happening, because they want to continue this thread.
Got to remind you that the Inhumans are still around.
Still around, right. So if you think about it, this is kind of, in its own way, it's kind of groundbreaking in terms of what Marvel did, because it wasn't just one thread, kind, you know, it wasn't this linear thing. They would branch off and then come back and keep putting reminders in a panel or two, as they do here. I think it was this three panels.
Yeah.
That to say that we're not done yet.
There's cool storytelling stuff, even with the... with the scale between Wyatt Wingfoot and Johnny Storm, you know, like Johnny Storm is a superhero, and there's a dude who's got a foot and a half on him and is way brawnier. I want to know more about that guy.
Yes.
I don't know that it pays off in any memorable way, but
it's a good setup. And this is the second issue that ends with this like three panel comic strip for your next issue build up. It's almost comics within comics, you know, and it's like, it'd be the equivalent of scenes or something in a movie, but you're using these different pieces of the monthly comic format.
All right, so we come to the end of FF 48 through 50. Like I said, my favorite story of all the superhero stories I've ever read.
And the one other final little piece that's kind of fun is there's a Gerard Conway.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, there it is, man. Gerard Conway, future Marvel writer, probably just within the next, you know, year or two, maybe, is waxing about his love of Gorgon and the Inhumans.
So we come to the end.
Amazing.
Yeah, Warren, that's a thrill.
Warren, thank you so much for bringing the originals, man. There's some electricity in those actual objects to be able to look through these things as opposed to the... and that's the thumbnail right there, man.
Yeah, that's incredible. Okay.
That's the thumbnail. Let me just get a... good shot of that, man, to screen cap for the end.
They're kind of got to do this. There we go. 48, 49, and 50.
Yeah, amazing comics. Again, like some of the first comics I learned about as a kid and then would try to seek out, you know, whether it's in those Marvel, some kind of reprints. But certainly a legendary Marvel comic, legendary superhero genre.
And now you know why the Fantastic Four is the only comics collection I kept. Besides the GLGAs and maybe one other. But this was the one. I have a long run. I will never get rid of them.
Super cool. Let's get out of here, guys. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy, what do you have?
Join me on patreon.com/jimrug, where you can find a lot of my original art, process posts, out-of-print zines, and mini comics. patreon.com/JimRug.
Warren, you got a plug to get out of here?
Actually, none right at this point.
You're going to come back in. We're going to be plug heavy. Red Room, issue one, is coming out in May. It's going to be a monthly comic. You could pre-order your copy through Fantagraphics today at my link tree in the description below. You could read the comics ahead of time on my Patreon in the link tree below. Get it put on your pull list at your regular comic shop. It's going to be coming out monthly.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on in 2021. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them one last set of marching orders, man. We're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.